As I realize, like 10 hours is not going to happen. 11 hours is not going to happen. Like 12 hours, you know. And I looked at my wife at one point and I was like, I can't go to work and tell people what I ran this in. And she's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, this is embarrassing how slow I'm going. She's like, what is wrong with you? You're like, you're 35 miles into this run. I'm like, it's so embarrassing. Like, I can't do this. And, you know, and it took her a lot of just like, you're an idiot, snap out of it, you know, left foot, right foot, let's go, to kind of get my mind right.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Sean Bemis. He is a soon-to-be-retired Naval Special Warfare Leader, an ultra runner. He's fairly new to ultra running, but he has some good stories, and he's getting into the mindset of what it takes to be an ultramarathon runner. Enjoyed the conversation. Hope you do, too. Here is my conversation with Sean Bemis. Welcome, Sean, to the show. I appreciate having you.
Yeah, no, I'm super happy to be here. This will be fun.
Now, we have connected over LinkedIn, and so when we had a previous chat, and you said I'd like to hear a little bit about your history as in the service. You were in the Navy?
Yeah, so technically still am. So I got a few months left, but I will retire in February after 20 years.
Okay, and you said you were actually in you were supporting some of the troops. You were in. In Naval Intelligence, was that the?
Yeah. So worked in intelligence and did a little bit of everything. So I was on a ship, had 18 months in Iraq total with the Army, spent some time with Naval Special Warfare, so Horn of Africa, and then, plenty of time sitting in, you know, just regular office or on those watch floors that the movies make look really cool, but really are just soul sucking, to be perfectly honest.
So, and you're kind of getting out, or you're going to be looking at, doing tell me what the role is you're looking at going into after you retire from the service.
Yeah. So I found this niche of, guys that in particular leaving, you know, the special operations community, that started working in professional sports. And, you know, kind of one of the roles that guys like me can fill is as a chief of staff or chief of staff, like guy that, you know, for someone like me, it's really about like, I'm very familiar with processes and, you know, really just taking a staff and making them efficient and effective, through processes that are sustainable and repeatable. So you know, working with a professional sports team and their staff to just make them that much more effective, to give them just an advantage over the competition.
Yeah. And I know, we've heard about the chief of staff in the White House, but so what for those of us, like, I saw you'd written a little bit about what is the role of a chief mm-hmm. of staff. So what's the advantage of a chief of staff? So who's somebody who might hire you, what would be the advantage to having a chief?
In every organization it's going to look a little bit different. You know, the chief of staff of the White House compared to it's a role that came out of the military, actually, Camp to AIDS, and then it evolved into the chief of staff role. But you know, for someone like me, I found this gap of like teams that just, I, to be honest, they run like terrible meetings, like 30-minute meeting about a ping pong table for the locker room for the guys. And you've got a billionaire owner arguing because, you know, the guys presented him with a $1,200 table and he went on Google real quick and found one for $900. And it's a 30-minute discussion. And then the owner's like, all right, I got a thing, I got to go. and everyone's looking around on Zoom and they're confused. Do we buy the table? Do we not? All over $300. So just one example, but you know, there's a lot of ways where just efficiencies can be built in. You look at the draft process, the way they evaluate, you know, and just the way they spend their time, say with their scouts, and the way reports are written and all those kind of things. So it's really taking the boss's vision and just helping him to continue to look up and out. And, you know, someone like me taking the rest of my time to look down and in. And how can you make that staff more efficient? How can you answer questions before they get to the boss? Questions that you know he's going to have. And then eventually you become a thought partner and you can start to make some decisions. You know, you're obviously not going out and signing players to multi-million dollar deals, but you can let the boss, you know, you can make decisions on the boss's behalf at some point, as you've built that trust within the organization, and just saves him that much time.
So is that a role that most teams have? I mean, it sounds like, you know, and from what I have heard of people who actually work in corporate, I think there'd be a lot of people who might want to have you, do that for them. My friends who work in corporate jobs, oftentimes they talk about how, you know, meetings are so inefficient.
Right. Yeah. It's from what I've seen, it's kind of an emerging role. So it's pretty interesting. It's pretty exciting. I fell into this group, they call themselves the Leadership Bunker. And it's guys all over the world. I'm really the one guy from the States that's there pretty consistently. You know, we just meet on Thursdays, pick a leadership topic and chat about it. But as I've had conversations with these guys, you know, it's pretty new to them as well. It's even the chief of staff period is a new kind of concept to them. So walking the dog on that. And I think if I can get my foot in the door someplace and, you know, and do well, because it's such a new thing, I think there's a lot of opportunity. But you know, you look like the Washington Football Team, their head coach just hired a chief of staff. The Sacramento Kings actually have one on their coaching staff now. He's labeled the assistant coach chief of staff. So yeah, it's something that's starting to catch on, but it's definitely in the early stages in the sports world.
It sounds like you've been kind of in the if you're an emerging field, you might be in a perfect position. So if this podcast happens to land in somebody's ears who has a connection, they can look you up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So
you're also an ultra marathon runner. So I wanted to find out how was it you got started running? I mean, did you start running in the Navy? I mean, you know, most of us who haven't been in the service, I mean, you know, the Army tends to do a lot of running, but was that something you started in Navy and continued? Or?
Yeah. So I was a soccer player all growing up, you know, played pretty competitively in a decently high level. And so for me, you know, if there was a ball, awesome. You know, I'll go all day. But you know, you start anything over a few miles for me, I just hated it. You know, in the Navy, like there's really not too far to run on a ship. You know, there's not a big need to be able to run miles and miles on the ship. You're eventually going to hit water and it's not going to do you any good. It was something that it off and on, you know, I'd kind of play around with it. But it really wasn't something until the last couple years that I really got into.
So what was the thing that kind of made you think, well, maybe I can go out and run?
Yeah. So it was Thanksgiving of 2019, and my sister-in-law said, I'm down in South Florida, where it's just hot, muggy, and gross all the time. And my sister-in-law's both, they live up in Brooklyn, New York. And so we were up there, and just in the mornings, I just got up and I'd go run every day. You know, in the first few days, it was, you know, 5 mile runs, and you know, I was just really enjoying, you know, different route each time, exploring the city. And it was kind of funny, the last morning or second to last morning, I came back to the house and, you know, everyone, how'd you do? How far'd you go? And, you know, I was telling them, and my mother-in-law was like, well, how far are you going to go tomorrow? And I was like, well, maybe I'll run to Manhattan. You know, it's not that far. And she was like, yeah, all right. You know, she kind of laughed it off. And I was like, all right, yeah, I will now. So I, yeah. You know, pulled out Google Maps and found a couple bridges, and I was in Manhattan probably less than a mile. But you know, nevertheless, ran to Manhattan and back.
Yeah.
And then from there, it was, I got back and I was, you know, I was getting close to 40 and, you know, getting close to that retirement age. And I had really enjoyed that weekend and, you know, decided, hey, I'm going to run a marathon. Like, it's, that'd be just kind of a fun bucket list thing. So started running, started researching things, you know, like you'd mentioned, I'm an Intel guy. So I'm like digging into all these websites and looking at stuff. And there was one day I was at work and I went to the New York City Marathon. And I was, I'm a guy that September 11th happened and September 12th, I was talking to recruiters. And by February I was in Navy boot camp. You know, so that was kind of the start of my Navy career. And, you know, so I thought there'd be something a little bit poetic, you know, a little bit of symmetry in my life.
Mm-hmm.
If I could run the New York City Marathon, you know, within my last like year of service. And so I went to their website and it just happened. The lottery was that day. And I was like, well, if this isn't a sign, I don't know what is. So I actually blew off a meeting. You know, I looked at my buddy and I was like, hey, can you cover down for me? Because I'm in the queue. And so he covered for me and ended up didn't get in. But shortly after that, we had a baby and, you know, for any parent, they know what it's like to sit up in the middle of the night and you're trying to stay awake with the kid. And I think how I've heard a lot of ultra marathoners get started. I just, you know, I was playing around on YouTube and at the time the goal was still a marathon. And all of a sudden I just start finding these ultra marathon things. I want to say it was the Ginger Runner or, you know, one of those guys. And I just started watching these videos. I'm like, well, if I'm going to do a marathon, that looks way cooler. You know, it's an ultra marathon. So why wouldn't I do that? And, yeah, so that's kind of how I made that decision and went down that path.
That's cool. So, you were running when you were running in New York, you're running on streets. Did you choose a trail ultra marathon or was it one that was on roads?
Yeah. So funny enough, it ended up being a trail. Even though none of my running is really on trails. We don't have that many trails down here in South Florida. And so it was the Jupiter Ridge, sand spur 50K was my first one. And so when I say trails, it was mostly sugar sand. I think they say it's about 95% sugar sand. So
what is sugar sand?
The softest sand you can imagine, that is sugar sand.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it was absolutely brutal. And then everything down here is flat. Everything in South Florida is flat. They had two dunes in this race. So you had one early on, you hit it and you go up. And then there was one right in the middle. It was a looped course, seven loops. But there was another dune right in the middle. And it was up and down and then out and back three times. So each loop, you climb this one dune right in the middle of the course three times. So that was something else. You know, you talk about, you always hear, you know, train where you're going to race and get as much, you know, reality into your training as you can. And there was absolutely nothing I did in my training that was hills or sand or absolutely nothing. So it was brutal.
So what did you do to, I guess, get through it? I mean, I think of sugar sand, you talk about soft sand, and I was in Florida a couple of years ago. I think it was Georgia. No. Yeah. It was Alabama. Mm-hmm. It was right next to you know, Panhandle of Florida.
Yep.
And we did some, you know, got off and saw and got into a little place where there was a little bit of sand, but it didn't seem to be that, you know, it wasn't like it was very, very deep. It was just a little bit soft. So what you're talking about is like suck your foot in type sand. Yep.
So I'm from the Midwest originally. I'm from Indiana, and it was like running in snow. You know, it was like ankle deep snow, you know, so enough to where you can still run, but enough to where every step is a added effort.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And for those who haven't run in snow or sand, you're a mountain runner.
Yeah.
It's like having, it'd be like having pillows strapped to your feet.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to describe it. It's, it was in the middle of the race. I, there's this one guy that him and I had been going back and forth, you know, the whole time. And, you know, as you do in those long runs, you get to chatting, and we were getting close to the end, and it was his first ultra as well. And he finally looked at me as we were kind of chatting. He was like, "Are your thighs just trashed?" And I was like, "Yeah, I would have had no idea, but it's that picking your foot up out of the sand. That was something my thighs were not prepared for. You know, my quads were just not ready for that, which I would have thought it would have been a hamstring thing, but it really was that upward motion and, you know, digging your quads out of that sand that's where I really felt it."
So most of your training was on road?
Yeah, it's almost all on road around here. It's, I found a couple parks around here that, you know, that I can kind of get a trail, but then, you know, if anyone is out in Colorado or Appalachia and they hear me mention trails and they Google the parks that are around here, they're just going to laugh. I mean, it's not trail running.
Yeah. And there's a lady who was on a podcast a while back, and, she lives in Florida, and she said, you know, it's flat and there's not very many trails. So she does most of her training on roads as well. But so, and flat is, you know, a lot of people like, you know, say, "Oh, it was, if you're running on flat, that must be a real advantage." But I would imagine you could say that it gets, well, but you had a sand dune. So.
Yeah. For that one, I had a sand dune. And it was, I was missing the flat every time I'd have to look up at that dune.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they said it was only about 3,000 feet of gain for
3,000 or 300?
3,000. So because you
kept looping. Okay.
Right.
Because you're doing it seven times. Okay. Yep. I was thinking of a 3,000 tall foot to sand dune.
That would be a big sand dune. No, it was, because it was, you had 28 climbs, right? Total.
Right.
Within the seven loops. So they said it was like 2,500, 3,000 feet elevation gain. And to be honest, that was probably the most gain. I probably hadn't done that much gain in the year of training leading up to that 50K. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty rough.
Yeah. I know people who train in Florida for races, other places in the United States have difficulty trying to find hills to, you know, to do any kind of hill work.
No, for sure. It's a lot of bridge repeats is what I've learned.
Yeah. And I've heard some people run in parking garages if they have a city that's big enough to have a parking garage. But I have climbed a couple of sand dunes, and that is a challenge as well.
So. Yeah. And you learn pretty quick. You know, you always hear, you know, walk the uphills, you know, run the downhill in the flat. And you learn pretty quick trying to run up a dune that it's just wasted energy, and you might as well just walk that thing. Like there's no ego at that point. I'm just going to walk this thing to get up.
Yeah. So, well, besides your quads being trashed, what were the things kind of going through your mind? What were you thinking when you got toward the, you know, toward that point somewhere around 25 miles?
Yeah. So to be honest, for me, it was a little bit earlier. It was my fourth lap. So it would have been about 17 miles in, roughly. And my daughter, one of my daughters, who she was 14 at the time, and she's a little runner herself. You could do stories on her, actually. But she went out there. She sat out there the whole time, the whole 8 hours. It took me 7 hours to finish, but you know, the time she was out there. But at one point I came around, I was like, you know, it's my foot was bothering me. And I was like, well, I'm going to change shoes. Like, I'm going to try something. I had two pairs of shoes. So I sat down and changed my shoes, and I just cramped. And I looked at her and I was like, I don't think I can do this. Like, and she looked back at me, you know, she's like, "Dad, you got this." And there's nothing worse than having like your 14-year-old kid look at you and be like, "You got it." And nothing worse and nothing better. Right. You know, I was like, "Nope, you're right. I do got this." And I rolled over, pushed up and hobbled off. But that race, a lot of it was her being there, you know, and knowing every four odd miles I was going to see, you know, wanting to be an example to her and show her that, like, hey, no matter how bad it gets, like, you know, no matter how stupid the goal is or ridiculous this race is, like, whatever it is, you know, you just keep plugging away and you'll finish and you'll do those kind of things. So,
so was she there as your crew? I mean, was that something you'd planned on?
Yep. Yeah. So she was, her and her older sister live up in Virginia and they had come down. It was over Christmas time. And so I kind of put it to them. I was like, hey, I signed up for this thing. And now that's the window. You guys are coming down here. You know, so first of all, are you guys okay if I just kind of go off for a day, half a day, whatever? And they were both like, yeah, do it, Dad. And then, you know, I was like, hey, if you want, you can hang out, you know, here at the house with your stepmom, or, you know, you can come with me. And the 14-year-old was like, yeah, I'm going with you. So she was my crew, and, you know, she had all the food. She had, you know, the water bottle refilled for me when I came back in every time, all that. So, yeah, it was great.
That's good. So had she ever done that before, or was it?
Nope. So I'd never done it, you know, first time. It's, you know, definite advantage to being a looped course is, mm-hmm. you know, she didn't have to go anywhere. There was no logistics. She just had her book and she was hanging out and I had everything laid out for her. So, you know, it was pretty simple to just, hey, this lap, this is the baggie, you know, this is what you're going to hand me. So,
yeah. So that was your first time. Do you have plans for continuing?
Well, so I've done one other one. So okay. That was in December. And then that following May, I did a 50 miler. So there's a Keys 100. It is just the overall name of the race, but they have a 50 mile race within it. And so just think Florida Keys. It starts at mile marker 50 mm-hmm. and it ends in Key West.
Okay. So you're running over the bridges.
Yep. You're over the bridges. You're highway one. There's only one road in, one road out, mm-hmm. and you're just on the shoulder for 50 miles.
So that was in May of this year, right? 2021.
Of this year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I think I knew somebody who was working on the 100 and it got so hot that he wasn't able to finish.
Yeah. It was the heat. They said it wasn't the hottest year ever. but I will tell you it. I remember I was 4 hours and 42 minutes into my run before there was cloud cover. It took that long before there was even a cloud. The cloud stayed over me for 8 minutes. I didn't see it again for another 20 minutes, got a wow. cloud. And that one was real brief. And then there was no cloud cover until the sun went down. I mean, there was nothing. So it was sunny. There's no shade out there. It's hot.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I heard. It was a pretty hot year this year.
Yeah.
So how was that? That was on road, obviously.
Yep. So that one was much easier to train for because I, you know, it's running roads in South Florida. So that one, the training better mirrored what I was doing. Overall that run, it was rough. My nutrition got off and, I went out way too fast. And so from about mile 12 to 37, I was nauseous. And you know, eventually came out of it, you know, and was able to finish. But you know, I had time goals that just were honestly looking back were unrealistic. And those things were just blowing up as I struggled through my nausea. And yeah, it was a real struggle to finish that one.
So was it the time you had to finish was it the same as the 100 or was it, did it have its own cutoffs?
The cutoff, to be honest, the cutoff wasn't an issue for me. So I couldn't tell you where the cutoff laid with that one. But I had, you know, in my head what I thought I should be able to run it in. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, I had, you know, A goals to finish, and then B goal was 10 hours. And looking back on it, I think that would have put me about fifth or sixth place in the race. And I'm a middle of the pack guy. Like
yeah.
both races I finished basically on the exact middle of the finishers. So,
okay. Wow.
Yeah. That's completely unrealistic.
So when you were in the race and realized your time goal was falling apart, what were the things you said you know, how did you kind of readjust?
A lot of it was my wife. So they had no aid stations, because of everything that's going on. So you had to have a crew. And so I had my wife was my crew. You know, she's leap hopping along. And I started blowing up. And at one point I remember I looked at her and I'm someone who I put my goals out there, right? I put my intentions out there and I tell people. And so like people at work, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm running this 50 miler, you know, it's 10 hours is my goal, like all this stuff. And as I realized, like 10 hours is not going to happen. 11 hours is not going to happen. Like 12 hours, you know, and I looked at my wife at one point and I was like, I can't go to work and tell people what I ran this in. And she's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, this is embarrassing how slow I'm going. She's like, what is wrong with you? You're like, you're 35 miles into this run. I'm like, it's so embarrassing. Like, I can't do this. And, you know, and it took her a lot of just like, you're an idiot, snap out of it, you know, left foot, right foot, let's go, to kind of get my mind right. And it helped getting over the nausea and realizing, okay, you know what, like I am going to finish. I am going to make it to the end. And, but yeah, it was tough for sure. I went to some dark places and I was very down on myself.
Yeah. So when besides your wife, was there a way to get out of those, or was it just her encouragement that got you through that?
I mean, it was her encouragement. It was, funny enough, one of the things I did is through my networking, you know, into my second career, that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. I had an IMG Academy. It's this boarding school in just south of Tampa, for elite athletes. And I had found my way to somebody that worked there and, you know, went up for a Friday and, you know, spoke to the staff, got a tour of the campus, an amazing place. But the guy that I got the end with, he's kind of a mental skills coach, if you will. He's got his PhD and he did his thesis study on the mindset of an ultra runner. He's run marathons. He hasn't made it up to the ultra level at that point, but he will, right? There's no doubt. But he had been on a few podcasts. And so I actually threw a couple of those on and listened to this guy, you know, who from academia researched what I was going through in those moments. And to be honest, it kind of normalized what I was doing, you know, to kind of realize that, like, because too, you know, everyone's so stretched out. There was only a couple of people I was seeing, you know, a handful of people. Besides, they had these relay teams, Eric, 100 milers. You get 6-7 people that can run them and they're flying by you. You know, you're at mile 35 and this, some kid goes flying by you. It's only his 15th mile of the day. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, but it just mentally, it just crushes you. But you know, so anyway, you're not really seeing many people other than the couple people you're kind of with. But listening to that podcast, it really normalized something that is not normal, you know? I was just like in my head, I'm like, okay, you know, there's academia, there's people that have studied this. So obviously enough people do it that, you know, someone can earn a PhD from studying us.
And that's the first night I heard of anybody earning a PhD in the mindset of an ultra marathon runner. Yeah. makes me kind of like, okay, whether I'm on track or not. I may have to listen. So you are listening to the podcast while you're running.
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually like to listen to books on tape, or podcasts when I run more than music, or I have to have something. I don't know how people do it without anything. But yeah, I listen to a lot of books and podcasts when I run.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting that you were listening to the mindset of an ultramarathon. Yeah. Well, an ultramarathon professor speaking to you while you're running an ultramarathon. That's I guess not a bad strategy, I guess.
Yeah, it worked. I can't say I've gone back to it, but for that day and that moment, that's what I needed.
Yeah. that's good. So you finished the 50. What was it like when you got done? Were you like, oh, this, I'm good now?
In the moment, yeah. it was at mile 42. I kind of chastised my wife and I was like, why did you let me do this? She's like, And I'm lucky she finished crewing for me because she gave me a look and I was like, oh, shouldn't have said that. But no, like in the moment, you know, I was like, all right, you know, I feel good. I'm, you know, I'm there, I'm done. And, you know, the whole family had gone down. My in-laws had gone down. They watched my two youngest kids while I did all this. And the next morning we got up and we're like, well, we'll go to the beach before we leave. And I'm stumbling around and, but you know, we do a quick search for Key West best beaches and it's where the finish line is. So we're like, all right, you know, we'll head down there. And funny enough, they gave me a 50K medal instead of a 50 miler. And normally I wouldn't care about that stuff, but that was one first 50 mile. I was like, no. I, you know, hit up the race director. I was like, we need to swap these out. So we went down to the beach, but there were still 100 milers coming in. Right. And mm-hmm. this is, I finished before midnight. I want to say it was about 10 at night. And you know, we're going to the beach 12 hours later and there's still 100 milers coming in. And these guys, some of them, I mean, they just look like death. There was this one old man, he had like five people around him and he's just not standing up straight, you know, just, and I don't know what it was. We're like driving out of there and like, you know, honking the horn, we're cheering for these people. And there was something I was like, I want to know what that feels like. I want to know when you're 2 miles, when you're on mile 98 and you got 2 miles to go, I want to know what that feels like. So, yeah, no, there's definitely more to come. I'm signed up for another one in December. It's a stage race. So 2 days, it's 81 miles total, but it's back in that soft sugar sand. Oh. And so it's a really interesting format. So we'll see if I can do it, if I can make it all the way to 81 miles.
Yeah. So as you say, it's a stage race, split up between 2 days. So it's like 40 some miles a day, or is it going to be a long day and a longer and short?
Long day and a longer day. Yeah. So Saturday is the 50K. So it's that 50K I ran the year before. I think they have us running it just with everyone there. So you do the 50K, that's all you do on Saturday. And then Sunday you come back and it's a 5K, a 10K, a half marathon and a full marathon. And each of those have cutoff times that you have to hit, in order to advance to the next one. And, you know, and they've got the time when you start obviously and all that. So interesting, a little bit of strategy.
That's an interesting concept. Yeah.
It really is, right? Like on the 5K, do you push yourself? So you get, you know, I think it's like 10 minutes between the cutoff and the start of the 10K. So do you push yourself a little bit? So you've got 20 minutes or like, I mean, do you take it all the way to the end and, you know, it's where like you only get those 10 minutes or, you know, how do you play that out? And what even can you do after running a 50K the day before, you know, mm-hmm. it's your first thing back in that sand. So, super interesting. It's the first year they've done it. So it should be fun.
Yeah. That's it. So have you heard of the backyard ultras?
Yes. Yeah. Heard of them. Yeah.
I'm like, that's kind of, it's not quite the backyard ultra, but it would give
you similar. Yeah.
It would be similar in the fact that you've got, yeah, your strategy of how much do you run the first time.
Yeah.
That's an interesting concept. What's the name of the race?
It is the Jupiter Ridge Five Trails.
Jupiter Ridge Five Trails. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll look that up. I'll be, and that is in the spring or
December.
December. Okay.
Thankfully. Yeah. December is a good time to run in Florida.
So. Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like it. So 100 miles. What do you have a race in mind that you'd like to do?
I mean, to be honest, the Keys 100, you know, that'd be kind of cool. You know, I know the back half of it. And being down in South Florida, there's no real one in mind though, to be honest. I mean, you know, there's obviously those like big ones that, you know, I think everyone, whether it's Hard Rock or Western States or, you know, that everyone's like, maybe one day.
Yeah.
But to be honest, 100 miles, like it's just, you know, get me from the start to the finish, you know, and let's go.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people have a similar story is like they'll do the 50 or they'll do 100K and then look at the people who are finishing the 100 miles and say, Yeah, I didn't quite get to that point, and I want to see what I've got.
Yeah. No, it's, I think there's something about, you know, just it, you're close, right? And it's, there's levels of ultra marathoning, right? You know, it's to say you're an ultra marathoner and there's, it's an incredible thing to do, right? But let's be real. There's a difference between the guy that runs 50K and the guy that does the 100 miler. There just is, right? And, you know, it's, I think if I'm going to be doing this and be in this sport and play around in it, and when I get to that point, you know, it's, I've still got the two young kids at home. And so training is a little bit difficult, you know, at times. And so, you know, when I get to the point to where I think I'm ready, we'll see. But yeah, you know, but before too long, I'd love to just try it and just know, can I be that guy? Can I do that? Can I push through and, you know, just left foot, right foot all the way to the end.
Yeah, that's true. And there are times, I mean, with 100 miles that, you know, you may not finish your first one. And,
right.
You know, that's always a possibility. There's you experience trouble with nutrition on your 50. A lot of people have the same thing on hundreds. And that's, I think, the appeal is the fact that it's a hard thing to do. It's something that takes a lot, and it'll take everything you have, and still not guaranteed finish. So.
Yeah, no, I think for me, ultra marathoning has been, you know, it's no matter what's going on in my life, like, you know, I ran 50 miles in a day in May in the Florida Keys.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so like,
in the sun.
Yeah. You know, so like bring it, whatever issue I'm having in the office, like, you know, so you couple that with, you know, some of my military experience, and it's just like, yeah, let's go, bring it. Whatever I'm dealing with, I can push through, and I can figure this out.
Yeah. And I think that's the appeal, I think, for a lot of us is that it gives you that kind of confidence of, yeah, if I can do that, then yeah. whatever's ahead, I'll manage, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling. So, well, if somebody hears this and would like to connect with you, what's a good way for them to reach out if they have a job offer or just wanted to say hi?
Yeah. So LinkedIn is really my only social media, if you will, or anything I've got. So yeah, LinkedIn is where I'm at.
Okay. Okay. Well, that sounds good. And I'll link that in the show notes. So
perfect.
Well, thank you a lot. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was my pleasure. I appreciate it, Eric.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you know somebody who might like it as well, please take just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. And if you enjoy most of the episodes, please tell your friends. That's the best compliment you can give. I truly enjoy being able to spend time here with you each week, and I appreciate that you take the time to listen. If you have any comments, questions, or stories that you'd like to share, go to ultramindsetpodcast.run, and you can leave a written or a voice message. You can also find the show notes for this episode and more at the same link, ultramindsetpodcast.run. Remember, it takes an ultramarathon mindset to go the distance in running and in life, and a strong mindset is a skill you can learn. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.